Welcome back to The Organizing Therapist. My name is Jack Register and I am your host. Our podcast is meant for those folks within the behavioral health industry, whether they be peer support specialists all the way up to physicians, who want to understand how organizing actually happens in social movements and how we as a profession and an industry can bring some of these techniques to our work that we do every day. This podcast comes from my experience, not only as a clinician and an academic, but as someone who's also been a public policy professional who has worked as a government relations director for trade associations and been involved in legislative change at the local, state, and federal level. So everything that I offer here comes out of my experience and is meant to be educational and to give folks opportunities. If you want to find out more about what I'm about and what The Organizing Therapist is about, please check out my website at jack-register.com. So in today's conversation, we're going to talk about the idea of what does policy change really mean and how does that process really start? I have an old mentor of mine who used to say all the time, do not go to Ace Hardware and get oranges because you're not going to be able to get what you're looking for because back in the day, Ace Hardware didn't sell oranges. And so the notion is you have to go to the right place to get something done. Oftentimes we think that whenever it comes to issues around insurance or reimbursements for us as providers, or when it comes to policies around how services are defined at the state level, that we can simply go to a legislator or go to Congress in order to fix these issues as if it's a one-stop shop. And that's not how things work. So what I want to start with is what is sort of the payment pyramid that happens within behavioral health, particularly whenever it comes to issues of insurance and reimbursement that is defined outside of what the issues are that we see with the patient when we do the assessment. So first and foremost, the thing to understand is that the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or sometimes called CMS, is a federal agency. They control Medicare, and then by default, some of the Medicaid rulings, and I say some because there's some state involvement that comes into play. So when Medicare sets the rules for how services are paid for, both in health and behavioral health, they set the standard for what is considered medical necessity and what issues actually qualify for care. So oftentimes, the CPT codes are the codes that we use to say, hey, we're with someone, and for many of those who've been in the industry for a while, those codes are kind of like our secondary language. Those codes become really important. And we might have different parts or different professionals enacting parts of what we're doing. Like in many agencies, some of the support services or some of the peer-related services might be done by people who are not directly enrolled. And typically within the language of reimbursement, when you hear not directly enrolled, that tends to mean what some folks would call paraprofessional or non-licensed professional. So that folks are clear about the languaging, much of what I talk about in the podcast directly initially affects those of us who are independently licensed and able to direct enroll, but the larger implications affect the entire industry. So when CMS makes a ruling about, let's say, for example, the way in which we look at post-traumatic stress disorder, for example, they then set what they're going to do. Now, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, or DSM, and the ICD manual, which is a manual used in the medical side of the house, also have criteria. We are trained in terms of our scope of practice and the way in which the statutes allow us to practice to focus on how we're going to work with someone based upon the diagnostic that comes from the DSM. That's where our authority comes from. Now, here's the complicated part, my friends. Sometimes what we deem through the diagnostic process and what the reimbursement process deems are two different things. So this is part of why we sometimes have this sort of disconnect. Medical necessity comes about whenever the referral comes to us as an independent practitioner. Because for someone to actually need care, that means that they have something that is within the canon of the DSM and the ICD-9. Usually it might be a primary care provider or some other person in our client's world who has said, hey, you could really use some counseling around this. The only times we really have to seek out that medical necessity is if we have someone who comes to us with something and they've never had a medical evaluation and they've never had anyone say to them, hey, this looks like that there's more going on here than meets the eye, and your depression may look like it's postpartum, or your depression may look like this or that. So it's a complicated sort of process. The thing that's really important to understand is that it can feel like a conflictual process. Now, our colleagues over in the addictions world and with ASAM, the American Society for Addiction Medicine, have really been working on trying to bring payers to the table to be able to dialogue with us. Now, I'll just say as a point of reference and as a point of disclosure, I am an ASAM faculty member, and that just is a simple thing of part of the experience that I bring. So part of how ASAM does that is they actually have conversations and have providers understand our perspective as the providing folks who are doing the care and helping us understand their perspective as the folks who are paying for the care so that we're all speaking the same language. This is something that I think, in my experience professionally, needs to come across the entire behavioral health spectrum so that we are in a situation where we are able to actually all be speaking the same language. The other thing is that insurance has this tendency to focus on risk. And what that means is that they're always looking for what's really going on here, and is there something else happening that should be taking care of this before we take care of this financially? So those two givens need to be put on the table as we understand how do we go about understanding what's going on from the end that we have. Most of us who are providers who own our own practice start with the idea of our rates, and we look at the rate sheets that we sign when we sign our contracts. On occasion, depending upon how big we are and what our services are and how much we're able to provide, oftentimes on a regular cadence, many of us will go back to the insurance companies and say, hey, I need to have an increase in my rates because what I'm able to do or how I'm able to do that has shown evidence of the ability for me to work with folks in a bigger way. This can be successful in some cases and cannot be successful in others, depending upon the market, because many insurance companies will carve up the geography into markets. And there may be saturation in the particular market that you're in because of the number of providers, which means there may not be as much access to getting a contract. And this is something that if you've been in practice for any length of time, you then experience this idea of that there's so many folks doing what you're doing that you have to specialize further than perhaps maybe you did in the past. Understanding where to start is really important. So, as with all good clinical work, we always start with the assessment. So, what I would recommend that you do is consider the idea of starting with what is the question that you have specifically, and who do you think has the answer? So let's say, for example, that you have a question around why is it that I'm only making X amount on this particular CPT code, right? So then what you do is ask yourself, are there any other players involved in the entire industry who might also be able to answer that question? So, for example, there are organizations out there that do comparative analyses of different rates for different CPT codes in general, depending upon your level of licensure and your scope of practice. So that could be a place that you start in terms of comparative analysis. Then you could go to all the contracts that you have and your current rates that you currently have available to see where things stand. Then, if you're trying to figure out what is the thinking behind or the process behind how these rates get determined, is when you would go to those individual insurance companies and have those conversations. Now, I'll be honest, that in and of itself is a full-time job. Now, if you're questioning how something is being done from the place of saying, hey, this doesn't feel right, you may have to go to your state insurance commissioner. The insurance commissioner is a part of state government who regulates the state contracts or the ability for insurance companies to operate within their state. On occasion, states may bring some sort of claim against a company who is an insurance company because they are not doing what they're supposed to do in that particular state the way that they're supposed to do it. And we can, as citizens of the particular state, or if our business practices in that particular state, if we're registered as a business in that state, then that state's insurance commissioner would be a resource for us if we needed to make a claim against an insurance company who was not acting in good faith. Now, we have to be able to prove this through the contract, and we have to be able to prove what's happening. And that step needs to happen before we get legislative. And the reason for that is that they're going to ask that question at the legislative level. Because we can pass law that says legislators have to, they can say to insurance companies, you have to pay providers an appropriate wage. But it's going to be up to the insurance commissioner and state government to actually implement what that looks like, depending upon the particular situation at hand. So legislators are not necessarily going to be able to do a rate increase per se in legislation because that's too specific. What they can do is to say that insurance companies have to act in good faith to the contracts. They can say, we're going to hold you to the contracts. So becoming connected to your state insurance commissioner is really important. One of the first steps in any organizing strategy is to build a network. Now, I'll say that I am Southern by my heritage, and that means that I am someone, as my grandmother would say, who could talk to a stump and become friends. So I firmly believe in the idea of building relationships. So that might mean I'm connecting with folks in all the states that my practice is associated with in some sort of way on a regular basis, and not just when I'm in crisis or I have a question. So that might mean I'm connecting with trade groups, I'm connecting with other providers, I'm connecting with other folks doing the same thing I'm doing, as well as with the state insurance commissioner, just telling them that I'm willing to be an expert for them in whatever area, or I am willing to be someone who reviews something for them and gives them data and feedback. Because folks who are in those kinds of positions always need feedback from the field. And that's why many insurance companies will have provider relations groups, and that's a good way to kind of get your voice heard. Now, for many of us, the capacity that we have to add yet another thing to our to-do list is really difficult. So what I would suggest is learning how to connect with others, either virtually or connect with other efforts that are already happening, so that you're not trying to take all of that stuff on at the same time. But understanding that the change that happens is incremental and very small in focus. So if your total concern is, I want to see X amount of increase in my contract in the next year, you may not see that for 3 or 4 years. So mitigating your expectations so that your expectations can be a part of an aggregate for the entire industry is also really important. And this becomes something that when I have been in organizing and government relations roles, a lot of folks find frustrating because there's a sense of there needs to be a return on investment of my time. If I'm going to be involved in something now, I want to see something come out of that within 6 months to a year. It may take you 6 months to a year to simply get in the door and build the relationships. So we need to think about this from a long game perspective and from the perspective of being involved in this over the long term. So that's something that a lot of folks really struggle with. But here's something that you can do to operationalize on a day-to-day basis. And this is really about aggregating your own data. So let's say, for example, that you've been in practice for 3 to 4 years. So you're going to know what your business trends are, but what are your clinical trends? What are your diagnostic trends? What are the trends in your treatment planning? What have been the things that seem to work really well? And what are the things that don't seem to work well at all? Putting this into a report that you could then share with other folks as appropriate, of course, without revealing any of your specifics of your business or any HIPAA information and all of those kinds of normal business concerns, but looking at being able to take a snapshot of your particular experience Because based upon the specifics of the population that you're serving and the evidence-based practices that would go with serving that population and the acuity and so on, you can then offer to folks who live at that policy level a snapshot of what's happening with this particular population over time. And that becomes something that I, as an advocate, consistently would ask for in terms of data that I would take with me into meetings. So that is something that you can start with. The key is in understanding where to go next, is to start with where you are now and what is your goal, and making your goal specific for you, and then putting it in context to the larger community. And this becomes something that then allows the trade groups at the federal level to be able to look at what is happening across the field, because we want to make sure that our rates are in line. So, for example, if we start to have rates that are really outrageous in one particular side of the industry, it's going to be made up for in another. So we may see higher rates for crisis intervention, which then might mean that our regular 45-minute level intervention may actually see its rate go down because insurance companies are not able to justify, from their vantage point, an increase across the board and putting more resources into the work itself. And that becomes the time when we would step up and say, hey, legislative folks, we need some help with that. So that's sort of the roadmap for how all of this happens. The next big thing to understand is what is the cadence and cycle of how policy actually gets made. In many states, there are legislative seasons, and those seasons may operate where in one session of the legislature, they're able to do any kind of legislation possible. In the next session of the state legislature, they're only focused on the budget if they're a biennial kind of thing. But each state may look differently. And then the feds have their own processes. As well as that, every government agency, whether local, state, or federal, has a rulemaking administrative rule process. So figuring out how that works is also really important. And I'm going to be doing another podcast that kind of goes into depth with that, because the administrative rule is the operationalizing a policy at the federal and the state level. So let's say, for example, that the feds say insurance companies will implement a 10% increase across the board. It's up to the state insurance commissioner and state government to then do the rulemaking process that then specifically outline how that goes. And then the insurance companies have their processes that they then go through where their provider relations committees are going to be involved. So the thing that I want you to really understand today is that this is a slow, gradual, incremental process, and that we can affect the process all the way along. But we have to first mitigate our expectations, be clear in our goals, and understand that this is a long game that may take much longer than most people think. So this is a starting point. Again, we're going to be doing more conversations about administrative rule and policy making in the future. If you have questions, please reach out to me. My website is jack-register.com. Thanks for being with me today.